This episode is brought to you by Visit Williamsburg. In Williamsburg, Virginia, there's never too much of a good thing. Whether you're a foodie, a golfer, a history buff, a shopaholic, an outdoor enthusiast, or a thrill seeker, you'll find what you came for here and more. So ask yourself, what is it you want? Discover Williamsburg and plan your trip at visitwilliamsburg.com.
Yo, what's up? Welcome to Kinda Funny Games Daily for Monday, March 14th, 2022. I'm on your host, Blessing Adeoye Jr. Joining me is LaCroix Poppy himself, a.k.a. my fellow Forbes 30 under 30, a.k.a. Tim motherfucking Geddes.
Bless, it's one of our Mondays. Every once in a while, the news stories kind of align in a way that is very Bless and Tim-centric. Wake it up to a new Sonic 2 poster that looks... perfect. Oh my God. Chef's what kiss. A day. A Kirby concert? Let's go, dude.
I mean, I don't have those in the news stories. We can just talk about those now, right? Like, let's start with the Kirby concert. I saw that and I was like, that seems random, but I probably could have predicted this based on the anniversary, right?
Oh, well, never predict anything off of anniversaries, Bless. We learned that the hard way many, many times. However, Sonic knocked it out of the park with a concert last year. Me and you both absolutely blown away by the quality of that thing. Here we have Kirby coming out. Now, say what you will about the Kirby game franchise. Nobody can talk shit about the soundtracks. Every single one is just an absolute, like, it's just fire emoji after fire emoji the entire way. Like, think about this. Think about Smash Brothers. Think about Fountain of Dreams. Think about Green Greens, right? Think about all that stuff. Hype, classics. The guy that composed all the Kirby music also composed all the original music for the Smash Brothers games. So the Break the Targets, all the like original dope Final Destination, all that stuff. That's that guy.
I wasn't sold before, because honestly, I saw the concert and I was like, am I really excited for a Kirby concert? Because the only song that came to mind was the song of like the songs that I've heard from Smash Brothers of like the Kirby levels, right? And, like the victory music that you have in Kirby. That was the only thing that really came to mind, but you are selling it. You are selling it on me a little bit.
It's going to be a good time.
It's going to be a good time. Also, that Sonic is going to be a good time. Like that poster, Kevin, if you can pull it up. I saw this poster. Was it this morning that was revealed or last night?
I saw it this morning. Sorry.
Okay. I might have seen it this morning too, but I saw it on the timeline. I was like, damn, they're really nailing this. They know exactly what they're doing here, and they're knocking it out the park. All the analogs to Sonic 2, the game, I think are fantastic. Had me super hyped. I'm ready for it, Tim. I'm not even watching the trailer yet because I don't want to get ruined on this movie.
This movie's gonna be a blast. Process.
Oh, that's a good one.
Now, Tim, like, don't give me that. It wasn't a good one.
That was good. You're almost there. How are you this daylight savings time? Because daylight savings is kicking my ass.
Yeah, nah, it's not good. It's not good at all. Yesterday I had lunch with Kevin. We were talking about it. You just get all discombobulated because I woke up at like 9 and I was like, it does not feel like 9. This is wrong. And I was like, it's actually 8. My whole body's fucked up. What's going on right now? And then this morning was even more difficult. I don't like this shit.
Yeah, I had the exact same day. I woke up at 9. I was like, why am I so tired? And then I realized, I was like, oh, no. Oh, God, it's spring forward. Kevin has the poster pulled up, of course. It's the exact mirrored poster from Sonic 2, of course, with Dr. Eggman in the background grabbing on.
No, show some fucking respect, Bless.
Sorry, Dr. Robotnik.
Thank you.
Excuse me. Dr. Robotnik, a.k.a. Jim Carrey in the background, holding on to the number 2 with Sonic and Tails in the front. Fucking sexy. I'm all about this, Tim.
Kev, go over to the other picture if you can.
Of the classic Sonic 2?
Oh, sorry. I sent it to Assets. I thought you had it pulled up because there's a side-by-side of the original Genesis thing. And it's just like, it's great, man. Even with his big old hand.
Yeah, big old Jim Carrey hand. Yeah, that hand that looks way too big for the for how it looks compared to the face.
You'll love
to see
it.
Sorry, guys. Slack is like freezing on me. Oh, wow. That looks cool. There it is.
Yeah, right? Yeah, so this is the original Sonic 2 poster, which you can see the mirror there. God, so cool. I can't wait. Yeah. Tim, you know what else I can't wait for? I can't wait for Ghostwire Tokyo. I can't wait for Stranger of Paradise. And guess what? Our news stories include both those things, because today's stories include Ghostwire Tokyo previews, Stranger of Paradise reviews, and another State of Play coming, because this is Kinda Funny Games Daily. Each and every weekday at 10 a.m. live right here on twitch.tv/kindafunnygames. We run you through the nerdy news you need to know about. If you don't want to watch live, you can watch later on youtube.com/kindafunnygames, roosterteeth.com, or you can listen later on podcast services around the globe by searching for Kind of Funny Games Daily. Remember, you can use Epic Creator Code Kind of Funny on all Epic Store and Epic in-game purchases like Rocket League and Fortnite to help support the channel. To be a part of the show, to patreon.com/kindoffunnygames, where bronze members or above get to write in, and silver members or above get the show ad-free with the exclusive daily post show. Housekeeping for you, a new episode of Kind of Funny XCast is available right now. It is Gary, it is Paris, it is Snowbike Mike talking about Starfield and if that can be the next best open world game. That is up right now on youtube.com/kindoffunnygames and on podcast services around the globe. Thank you to our Patreon producers, Gordon McGuire, Fargo Brady, and Pranksy. Today we're brought to you by MeUndies and DoorDash, but we'll tell you about that later. For now, let's begin with what is and forever will be the Rover Report. It's time for some news. We have five news stories today.
A baker's dozen.
Starting with our number one, we have a Ghostwire Tokyo preview roundup. And guess what? Greg motherfucking Miller himself has been playing Ghostwire Tokyo, and he's here with us. Greg, how's it going?
It is excellent. Blessing at OEA Jr. How are you?
I'm doing really good. Greg, how much of Ghostwire Tokyo have you played, and how much can you talk about for this preview?
So for the preview, you can talk about the first two chapters. I've played beyond that, but I currently can talk about the first two chapters, which I would have ended chapter two at probably like 3.5 hours. It's been interesting as you go around and read all the previews today, and I know you're going to dive into some of them, but as you go around, it's been interesting to look into see how many hours people have put into those two chapters, because I think some people double down longer on them knowing they can only talk about that, and the game's chock full of side quests. So if you really wanted to get lost in the side quests, you could obviously drag it out way longer than the 3.5 I put in.
Interesting. Okay, well, I want to talk to you all about Ghostwire Tokyo, but I want to start off with these previews. I'm going to start off with Andrew Webster at The Verge, who writes, "It's been a long time since I searched the streets for a phone booth, and it turns out to be an even more desperate experience when you're being tailed by vicious spirits. But it's something I found myself doing constantly while playing the first few hours of Ghostwire Tokyo, the latest release from Tango Gameworks, the studio behind the unsettling horror series The Evil Within. While Ghostwire covers some similar ground, with lots of creepy folklore monsters lurking around, it's also a clear shift from survival horror to action adventure, and early on I'm having a blast with the mix of tense firefights and horror-like exploration. The thing that has struck me the most so far, I'm about 7 hours in, is how action-focused Ghostwire is. Navigating the streets, subways, and other parts of Tokyo means using magic called ethereal weaving to blast a whole lot of bad guys, right? Ethereal weaving. It can feel almost like a first-person shooter at times. Battles often involve using multiple kinds of magic to knock out foes as they charge towards you in groups or hang back and toss glowing red orbs." And then I want to hop into Richard Wakeling at GameSpot, who writes this. "Most of your time in between story missions we spent taking on side quests. Friendly spirits will request your help dealing with various problems throughout Tokyo. For instance, a young girl asks you to retrieve her grandmother's cherished umbrella after it transforms into a yokai, while another spirit is concerned about the negative energy emanating from a bathhouse. Completing these side missions usually takes no more than a couple of minutes, and there's not a lot of depth to them. Finding an object or defeating a few enemies is all they amount to so far. You do occasionally get to learn about different facets of Japanese folklore, so hopefully these side quests evolve and become more interesting in later chapters. It took me 6 hours to beat Ghostwire Tokyo's first two chapters, which speaks to how much there is to see and do within its open world. Ideally, the side missions will improve enough to make them worthwhile, and I'm interested to see how the combat progresses as I unlock more of Atiko's skill tree. The story hasn't grabbed me just yet either, but its mysteries are definitely intriguing, and I'm curious to see how it all plays out." Greg, as I was going through these previews, the thing that stuck out to me was how people were describing it as an open world game, because I didn't really get those vibes from the trailers and the latest showcase that they did for Ghostwire Tokyo. Is Ghostwire Tokyo, is it an open world game as you understand open world games?
100%. Yeah, it's surprising, I think, for a game that we didn't know too much about coming into, right? Obviously, we've talked about this game a lot in terms of that amazing debut trailer, and then there's been things that have come out here and there, and then, of course, they had kind of like their own little gameplay demo, state of play kind of thing. It was one of those like, okay, cool, what are we actually getting into? And I'm surprised by the comparisons I find myself making when I talk about this game, or at least think about talking about it, because as Tim knows, I rehearse all the podcasts in my head. I don't actually talk to anybody. And it's the fact that, Blessing, the things I would immediately call out was, this game reminds me a lot of Crackdown. This game reminds me in the way they have us out there actually trying to, you know, do first person platforming and stuff, reminds me of Dying Light 2. Like, it is an open world game. It is a, you know, go through and, you know, you go to the Torii gates, and when you cleanse a Torii gate, that then expands the map. You can, it removes the fog of war. You see side missions on the map. You see, you know, some of the collectibles that are on the map that are tagged and stuff like that. There is this, okay, cool. What do you want to go do? And that's why I think you're seeing this really fascinating play right now of who is where they are with it in terms of how much time they've put into the game and how much time that actually went through and did it right. Like, I was talking to Jordan Midler over the weekend, and I when I was DMing with him and stuff, I was like, yeah, you know, obviously I'm playing it and I'm trying to get through to this thing. Like, he's like, oh yeah, I just finished this next chapter. I'm like, okay, cool. How far into the game is that? And he's like, that's 10 hours. And I'm like, oh my God. Like, I was looking at my game clock, right? And I was like, I hadn't at that point finished chapter 2. And I was like, 2.5 hours in. And he's like, well, I'm doing everything. Like, you know what I mean? Like, it's really up to you on how you want to consume it. And so, you know, for me, with the embargo of preview being Monday, I was very much like, cool, I did some side missions that, you know, I didn't like main path it on purpose, but it was the fact that I find, I think it was the last preview read there, right, about side missions being a little bit, okay, what is this for? Like, what, you know what I mean? Like, it's the main mission of trying to get my feet on the ground in this Tokyo and figure out what's going on. And that's what's been, you know, fascinating for me with it, is that I think the more I play, the more I enjoy it. Where the way chapter 2 ended, it was the first time where I was like, okay, you know what? I kind of feel like I have my head wrapped around how this game wants me to use the powers, how I'm going to use them in combat and what I'm doing. Like, I'm interested to play more. That said, I'm still not hot on it. I'm not in love with it. Like, I like it. I think what I love about it is that it is decidedly weird. It is, you know, it is definitely a Tango Gameworks game where, you know, go through and pet the dogs and then read their minds, and then they'll give you some clues and maybe you give them some food and they'll send you along your way and do this stuff. Like, it's not bad. Don't get me wrong. I'm not trying to say that. But the one thing I keep coming back to when I talk about it is that it is stiff. And what I mean by that is, like, gameplay feels stiff. Story feels stiff. I made a joke there about petting the dogs. When you pet these dogs that are all over the place, which I love, like, the fur on their face does not look good. It looks stiff. Like, to take it to gameplay, right? The one you read was talking about how, like, oh, you know, it almost plays like a first person shooter. They were kind of caught off guard by that. Like, this is definitely a first person shooter. Like, that's how it plays. You are using, of course, yeah, the ethereal weaving, as we were talking about, the magical spells that are coming out of your hands. But, you know, you have the one we've seen so many times in the demos, the green one, which is like your Uzi. It's like your rapid fire, bah, 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 bah. You know, you can hold it, you can charge it, you can throw out multiples at the same time. You have this red, which is this big explosive move, right? That's kind of like targeted towards one thing and it goes real big. And then you have your blue, which they're using. I think they describe it more like a claw because it kind of slashes wide or whatever, but for me it reminds me more of a shotgun where it's good for up close and personal, and you can take out multiple people with it. When I first started unlocking those things, even after green, like, it was like, okay, none of these feel great. Like, I'm doing it and I'm doing damage on them, and I'm doing, it takes me a lot of damage to actually get, you know, their chest to expose the core so I can take out the core and vanquish them that way. And then again, where I was talking about where I was with chapter 2, it's okay, now that I have the skill points and I'm investing them in the trees and I'm doing more damage, or I'm able to, you know, send out more charged shots, it's getting to be more enjoyable that way. But like I was driving at originally with this point, it still feels stiff. Like, it doesn't feel like a great first-person shooter where I'm like, right on it, lined up, bam, I'm making my shot and it feels great. It does feel a bit more, I'm all over the place. Like, you know, I'm turning and, like, it's maybe I need to adjust sensitivities to that degree or something to have that actually feel like, okay, I'm in control of the reticle more. I'm getting it where I want to be. But I don't feel it's easy to get necessarily where you want to be to begin with. And obviously, you're going to learn and play more with it. But then I think that also extends over to that traversal stuff I was talking about, right? Where I made the comparison at the top to Crackdown. You know, Crackdown, of course, famous for having orbs all over the city for you to go collect. In Ghostwire Tokyo, as you've seen many a time, right, all the people disappear, but their souls are still trapped on around Tokyo.
Still burns.
The soul still burns, Timothy. And so these piles of spirits are all over the place. And again, we saw this in, I think, the State of Play, right? Where you walk over with the little paper icon that I'm forgetting right now, the little, you know, prayer card, basically suck in the spirits, and then you put them into the phone booths to send them back to keep them safe. The thing is, though, these spirits are all over the place on the ground, but then they're also up on top of buildings and all over the place, because scalability and verticality of this game are a big part of it. And we saw that again, where it was those, like, okay, cool, you can do the, like, your spiritual tether to the floating guys in the air to kind of beam yourself up there, right? Once you're up there, Bless, and you're running from rooftop to rooftop, there is no fall damage. So you can jump off the top of the highest building, land on the ground, be okay. And you also unlock this ability to basically turn into a ghost or use it to like glide out as a ghost. So you go into this ghostly
ethereal weaving.
No, no, that's that. Oh, ethereal weaving is just spell casting. That's all the spells you're using.
Oh,
all
okay. Combat
stuff. One of your abilities here is, yeah, where you can turn into like a ghost and fly over the thing. And it's got a limited range. You can expand it more and do that. And again, that all is cool and fun, but it almost feels like something not tacked on, but it feels like something that came in late. Where it doesn't, this game doesn't feel like, and again, you can only compare it to other things doing stuff in the genre. Like Dying Light had locomotion and was kinetic, right? And it felt good. That was one of the big things you said about it, a game that had a whole bunch of different things that were plot holes and broken gameplay bugs, right? We all talked about how good it felt to parkour. Like, yeah, I don't get here.
Everything around Dying Light 2's gameplay, I felt like, was designed around those core elements of like, yeah, jump around, get into combat, and like, we're just going to build a game that just supports those two things. Do you feel like Ghostwire Tokyo kind of loses itself a bit in that aspect?
Not loses itself. It just does it in its way, which I feel is stiff compared to the competition, because it is like you get pulled up there, but like it's not like Spider-Man pulling on his web, right, to then shoot himself up there. It's more like this is a game where I definitely feel like I am a camera on a stick running around. And so when it gets to, hey, I'm going to go up there, it's not that I'm pulling myself up there. I'm being teleported up there and then stopping. And like even like if you wanted to think of me being a ghost and going up there, eventually I come back into a human and I drop like a pogo stick, right? Boom. And I'm just in my place or whatever.
So speaking of Spider-Man there, one thing that I noticed watching the trailers and gameplay videos for this. So, you know, with God of War, you have the axe and you feel like Thor. In Insomniac Spider-Man, you feel like Spider-Man. Watching these trailers, seeing all the spell casting, I was like, a first-person shooter, first-person Doctor Strange game could be pretty cool. Does the spellcasting have that type of like, oh, this feels cool to do, or?
I don't want to make a judgment on that. I'd want to wait for the review. Because in the beginning, no. I feel like shooting the green stuff does not feel good. However, at the end, there was a section where, you know, now I've unlocked this ability where I click in the sticks when I filled this meter and I slow down time and I can really, like, deliver damage. And then once I started, like I said, investing in the skill trees and getting more power out of them and being able to cast, hold the button longer to cast a bigger spell. But, like, once I started unlocking the abilities to cut those down by percentages, it was like, okay, I can see where if I get these all going and I'm going to feel powerful and whatever. Again, like, it's such a hard preview to do because I feel like I'm going to feel powerful in this game. I feel like I'm going to turn that corner and feel like I am owning people. And that's what you'd want in a narrative like this, right? Like, we didn't talk about the actual narrative, but it is, you know, you're just a normal dude, Akito, right, who gets knocked down while all this is happening, and then KK bonds to you, and now you're thrust into being a ethereal weaver. And so you're going through and learning all these things, and like, the story is interesting. Like, I think it starts in kind of a trite place. Again, there's a lot of Dying Light 2 comparisons to be made for what's going on and what gets used the impetus. But as you get going, like, there's more going on with KK, there's more going on with, it seems like he had a team of people that were like prepping for this and getting ready. Like, I'm interested in that aspect of it, but again, I'm not enthralled. Like, this is a game I'm enjoying enough. Like, right, you know, we're not, this isn't a review, this is a preview, but right now I'd be like at a, It's okay. You know what I mean? It's a 3 out of 5, but we'll see if that can come up or down by the time we get to where we're actually reviewing.
What is it about the game that is growing on you? Because you mentioned earlier that, like, you feel like the game's growing on you the more you play it, right? Is it that the gameplay loop is becoming more satisfying? Is it that the game is feeling better?
I think it's getting used to its world, if that makes sense. You know, okay. I think you come in, you start doing this, you're like, oh, well, this did it better, or this was more interesting, or I don't know about that. And then you start easing into, well, okay, this is what this place is and how the rules of this world are going to be and what these skill trees are. And they have, you know, these interesting mechanics in there. You know, they were talking a lot of talk about side missions and those things, again, about the mileage going to vary, right? And so far I've been able to, and I'm not going out of my way to Golden Path. I'm interested in the Golden Path, so I've been chasing it. And side missions I've been doing, side missions are always, not always the same, I shouldn't say that. Obviously, I'm very early in the game. But they are that you walk over to one of the spirits who isn't one you can collect because they still have work to do. You talk to that spirit and it says, oh man, you know, this guy was bad in that house and, you know, my granddaughter's in there or whatever. I'm not sure the relationship necessarily. And you go, okay, I'll go in the house. You go in the house and you get the cool stuff we've seen, you know, the hallways are moving and pictures are, you know, things and like the entire environment's changing around you. And then, yeah, you get in there and you know, you break this, you know, haunted vase or whatever, and then you fight some guy, and then you talk to the other spirit in there who goes back to the other spirit. You go back to the other spirit, and it's done. But what's cool about, like, you know, whatever, if you like the mechanics, and I do so far, I'm enjoying them. When you go through, right, those side missions then reward you with Magatama, which is like a currency you then spend on the skill tree that isn't skill points, but it's locking off some of the higher tier, like what you can do on that skill tree part. So like there is this actual motivation to go through and do it that isn't just more XP. Like I appreciate that they're, you know, hey, I really want this thing. I can target what I want in the skill tree. I can be like, you know what, I'm really invested in, like right now I've already invested in all the glide I was talking about, right? Like flying as a ghost. But the third level of that, right, is actually locked by, okay, cool, I need to go get three Makatamas and get that and have that ready to go and go. So it's like, it's this interesting thing and it's delightfully weird. I appreciate how weird it is. I like talking to the dogs. You know, the creature, the enemy design and creatures are creepy. I'm not, I think somebody called out in there, right? It's definitely not survival horror. Like it isn't meant to be that. It is action adventure. I do think I want to at some point in this game, if not immediately, turn up the difficulty. Like I'm playing on default normal and I'm just not, I'm just clowning people out. Even like the bosses, I think I've run into one boss and I wouldn't say it's a real boss. It's just like the introduction of a bigger character that you haven't fought before. And for her, I think I lost a couple times before I was like, oh, right. There's a block in this game. Nobody's really challenged me to block up until this point. I need to start using the block thing. And then when I did that, you know, owned her. No big deal, Tim.
Yeah. Greg, I have one burning question.
Yeah.
Do we know what the ghost wire is?
You know, Tim, a lot of people wonder what the ghost wire is. You have to find out. I mean, I do use that ghost wire to shoot up to the top of buildings. Maybe that is it, but they don't call it a ghost wire to my knowledge so far.
Because we'll ghost wire reminds me of one thing and one thing only. The opening of the hit 2002 movie Ghost Ship. And if you don't know what I'm talking about, I need all of you to YouTube that right now and just watch the intro because it'll blow your fragile little minds. You know what I'm talking about, Craig?
Yeah. 100%. No, I don't actually. I'm just trying to. Oh, really?
I was like, I don't know.
Ghost Ship. I've never seen Ghost Ship. I don't know.
Oh, guys. Oh, y'all are in for a treat.
Well, the chat's loving it. Whatever. I got hung up on this. Nanobiologist in the chat, who is also playing this for preview, said, Greg, did you over collect on healing items? Because that's how I just did that. This game needs a dodge badly. That's, yeah, I have a gajillion healing items and like you can stop at convenience stores. It's also this weird mashup of almost a, and I'm being fast and loose, I guess, with this, but it reminds me a lot of a first person Yakuza. Because it is like that with the convenience stores. And of course, you're walking around Japan, Tokyo, right? It feels like that. But even like the fonts and the text and how they're displaying some information feels like it. But yeah, I did nano overcollect on healing items. Again, not on purpose. They're just everywhere. And like you can use spectral sense, which is like detective vision, you know what I mean? To ping out and it'll show you where you're going to go for the main mission. But it'll also show you collectibles in the world, things to go break for, you know, to refill your ammo, things to break to get coins. And then also, yeah, food items all around. And so dodge is something this game desperately needs. I agree with that 100%.
I have two more questions. One, would you describe this game as a checklist game in the way that like we think about Dying Light 2 or Far Cry as being this open world game that, you know, where you're clearing out activities, you're looking at your quest log and you're just going through and clearing shit. And then also like, who is this game for in terms of audience, right? Because as you're describing it, it sounds weirder and weirder just in terms of how interesting and different the aesthetic is, but also how like, you know, this seems like a Far Cry style or Dying Light 2 style open world game that is doing things that I might go to Far Cry 4 instead or a Dying Light 2 for instead. Do you think that this has a specific audience that it is going for? And then also, would you say that those comparisons are apt?
Three questions. Yeah, I know. Number one, you were asking, is this an open world checklist game, right? Mm-hmm. Yes, 100%. Like that's
in post Elden Ring world.
I know, right? Well, you know, this game has been in development too long. They couldn't keep up with what's going on over there with the maiden list. Oh no, but 100% blessed. Like I have my map open right now, and guess what? It is an icon buffet of both them trying to be like really helpful with fast travel points and shopping things and the phone booths to drop souls off of, but then also like I'm in one lower section of the city right now, and I have 7 different side missions available right there that have opened up since I opened whatever Tory gate. And like my map's littered with stuff like that to go off and do. And then there's the Fog of War to go expand it out and clear, you know, it's just like Assassin's Creed with their points of interest, right? With their high marks that I'm forgetting right now, but you know, synchronization points where, you know, you see the Tory gates and then that opens up the map. Like it's exactly that. And so that's what's going on. And then for your question of who's it for, my answer would be, I think somebody who sees first off, to compare it to Far Cry, right, what this one's doing is, like, I would say immediately this game already has so much more personality as a game than Far Cry does. Far Cry, like Far Cry 6 to 5 to 4 to 3. Like, don't get me wrong, you know I love those games, everybody, but I do feel like they're all kind of turnkey in what you're doing. You know what I mean? Like, all right, cool. You know, got a bad guy to do it, and I'm going to take off a bunch of his boss friends or whatever to get there, and then we'll finally have a thing, and it'll be, and I'm going to fly. Blah, blah, blah. Like, this game is weird as shit. You know what I mean? Like, and it does do different things with the mechanics. And like I was talking about, I didn't expect to have all the verticality to it. But then, like, you know, actually, I guess that's a spoiler for something after the preview embargo. But it is doing different things with it and putting you in different places. And again, there are interesting turns it does in terms of the story and the world. Like, I think the fact that you're doing this all in Tokyo, right? Like, I've played in Tokyo in plenty of games, but I can't remember last time it was open world. I'm jumping from rooftop to rooftop. There's all these different Easter eggs. Like, I ran into a Persona 4 Easter egg in this. Like, hell yeah, that's awesome. You know what I mean? Like, that's a neat little thing to do in there and have in there. And what was the final question? Oh, who's it for then? I mean, it's you know, I think if you love Japan or you love weird stuff or you love sci-fi horror things, you know what I mean? And more horror. If you like horror elements to a open world game, which again, I don't think you get all that often in a modern setting. Again, you could point to your Bloodborne or something like that, but I think you're getting it more here with it. But again, I don't think it's knocking it out of the park on any of it.
My final question, because I keep thinking of more questions, and I know we got to move on with the show, and I know you're only getting preview impressions.
My mom's here. I don't want to go up and talk to her. You know, yuck. Give me a
fair enough. Y'all should watch Ghost Ship together.
I'm going to look into Ghost Ship.
Yo, I just watched the opening scene, and it is even more bonkers than I remember.
It's so much more get claimed? Than I remember.
If you watch it on this KFD,
you're going to get claimed.
We can't watch it. Is it worth the risk,
though? No, it's not. 7 o'clock this episode goes live.
Way too graphic.
Yeah, but we'll watch it off stream later. It's amazing.
Yeah, we'll watch it later. My other question for you then is, you know, right now I think we're in an open world moment with video games, right? Like, it started with Dying Light 2 and Pokemon Legends Arceus, right? We both played Horizon Forbidden West and absolutely loved it. I'm playing Elden Ring, and plenty of people playing Elden Ring, getting their minds blown by it. How is it playing this game after Horizon? Is it like a noticeable, oh man, I'm just coming off of this game that looks incredible, that plays incredible kind of thing? Or does it separate itself enough to where you're not thinking about it in that way?
I think, again, like, you know, to everything we've been playing recently or in general, I look to this game and I want more from it. And, you know, and what I want more from is like the story in general. Like, if you want to go to a Horizon comparison, right, it was the fact that every Horizon side mission, right, felt awesome. And even the main quest was really compelling in what you're doing. Like, this one, like, you know, I get the impetus for why the main character who's alive, you know, Akito, is going to go on his quest. And it was like, all right, well, that kind of seems paper thin and overplayed, but whatever, let's go do it. And it's like, okay, now I'm off. And like, I'm pulled through because I'm like, all right, well, I'm interested enough by KK, the guy who's the spirit inside of us, right, that we're using his powers for and stuff. Like, what's going on with this team and where's it? But like, I mean, I guess that's the best way to put it, right, is like, I've talked about it before, like Horizon Land. I can't wait to get back to Horizon, blah, blah, blah. I can't wait to get back to Ghostwire because it's my job. Like, I'm reviewing this. I want to play through it and I want to see it through and see what it is. Mm-hmm. If I wasn't, I wouldn't continue on with it. I don't think it's remarkable enough off the two chapters. Again, I got more warmed up to it by the end of chapter two, but I'm not sure if I'm going to turn that corner and be off to the races with it.
Greg, thank you so much for bringing your impressions, your preview impressions of Ghostwire Tokyo here to KFGD. I guess I don't want to assume, right? Like, are you going to have a full review for us at some point?
I will have a full review on the old TikToks and the Gamescast as well. I do not know the embargo, so I couldn't even tell you if I knew it or if I was whatever, so I don't know.
Gotcha. We'll stay tuned for that. Before we get to our next news story, though, I want to let you know that you can go to patreon.com/kindoffunnygames where you can get the show ad-free. And speaking of ads, let us tell you about our sponsors.
Shout out to DoorDash. Sometimes pulling into your driveway after a trip to the grocery store only to realize you forgot one key ingredient for dinner kind of feels like the end of the world. But with DoorDash, you can get the groceries and household essentials you need or a backup meal from your favorite local restaurant delivered in under an hour. Desperately craving a late night snack or just want to stock up for the week with DoorDash, get it all in one app. We've been using DoorDash forever. You hear us on the Kind of Funny podcast, always talking about the different taquerias we're ordering from, the different burger places we're ordering from. We are super happy and we love to just get the food delivered right to us. For a limited time, you guys can get 25% off and zero delivery fees on your first order of $15 or more when you download the DoorDash app and enter code kinda funny. That's 25% off up to a $10 value and zero delivery fees on your first order when you download the DoorDash app in the App Store and enter code kinda funny. Don't forget, that's code kinda funny for 25% off your first order with DoorDash, subject to change, terms apply. Shout out to MeUndies. We've all been there trying on clothes in a dressing room and everything makes you look like three kids hiding in a coat. Finding the perfect size is annoying. That's why MeUndies makes undies, bralettes, and loungewear to fit just right. Y'all know how long I've loved MeUndies. I am often wearing the shirt, the lounge pants, the undies, the socks like I'm doing right now. If I was a cartoon character, this would just be my outfit. It would just be all MeUndies. I love it because of the soft micromodal fabric and because it does fit really well. MeUndies knows that comfort starts with the perfect size and fit. That's why they wear test all sizes from extra small to 4XL for everything they make. They've got different cuts for different butts and everything from bold colors to fun adventurous prints so the world can be a comfier place for every booty. MeUndies promises if you're not comfortable with any product for any reason, you can return your order for a full refund within 45 days. MeUndies has a great offer for y'all. For any first-time purchasers, you can get 15% off and free shipping right to your door. To get 50% off your first order, free shipping, and 100% satisfaction guarantee, go to MeUndies.com/kindoffunny. That's MeUndies.com/kindoffunny.
Tim, do you smell that smell?
Ew.
That was so aggressive.
Get some nasal spray.
Honestly, guys, I'm like really lightheaded after that.
That was an
aggressive sniff. But hey, you got to do a sniff that big when it's review season. You got to get those flavors in your nose. It's funny, during the ad break, flavors. We were talking about like the flavors. The flavors of review season, Kevin.
I need like a moment.
Tim, catch your breath, because that was aggressive. But we were talking about like Greg. I was sold on that game before. Greg kind of unsold me a little bit, but also, you know, he's causing me to kind of reevaluate and look at my play schedule for my games, because like there are so many games coming out. And I was just tweeting out this morning that like, you know, I have my hands on GTA 5, right, coming out tonight. Booted it up, and when I tell you that I got emotional looking at this game run on performance RT mode. Super smooth, super crisp. This game that I put hundreds and hundreds, I don't know if you listened to the Friday's KFG with me and Zach Wisen. Like, yeah. I went back to check my hours, right? And I think on PS5 or PS4, I played like 500 something hours, and that's not including my PS3 hours, which I'm sure is at least 200, 300, right? I put in a lot of hours into GTA 5. And so, like, seeing this game that I've played a lot, look this good and run this smooth. Granted, I can't give impressions for like the things people want to know, like load times and online and stuff. I only played like 15 minutes earlier today, but seeing it run that smooth, I was like, holy shit, man, like this is doing something to me. This is incredible. And
that's
so review
awesome.
Season
I need to check
here,
it out.
It's on and popping. Oh yeah, 1000% go check it out, because if you've not seen GTA 5 in a while, or if you've even seen it like recently and you boot up this new version, you're gonna go, holy smokes, this looks hot.
Yeah,
it looks
that's
hot.
Awesome. Very exciting. Good for them. Took good a while for them. But yeah,
hey,
sometimes a wild
here.
Results in good stuff. Yeah,
exactly. It took them re-releasing broken versions of the classic GTA games for us to get here. But hey, you know, you got to do what you got to do. Speaking of review season, though, story number two, Stranger of Paradise Final Fantasy Origin has a review roundup. Right now, it's sitting on Metacritic at a 73 and on OpenCritic at a 76. Jada Griffin at IGN gave it an 8 out of 10 and writes this. It began as a collection of the loosest of story ideas that seemed to go nowhere, but slowly but surely, Stranger of Paradise Final Fantasy Origin pulled it all together and managed to stick the landing. Though you'll want to be sure to scour it for collectibles if you want the full effect of its revelations. A solid and engaging combat system can be tuned to be as challenging as it is rewarding. Coupled with versatile character customization that lets you mix and match from dozens of interchangeable jobs, your character fights how you see fit and gives the ability to experiment and find a winning combination in single-player or three-player co-op. There's significant room for improvement in the tools it gives you to manage the avalanche of gear that drops in every mission, but the nods to Final Fantasy history littered throughout its levels are enough to divert attention from that sort of thing. Add in all the extra challenges awaiting after finishing the story, and you will find plenty of content to sink your teeth into that is made even better when you join up with others. And then John Bales at Games Radar gave it 2.5 out of 5 stars and says, not entirely awful, but alarmingly rough and unrefined. There's a half-decent time to be had bashing your way through Stranger of Paradise's dungeons, but routine level design, rough edges, and messy narrative delivery stop the experience evolving into a compelling adventure. Despite its efforts to create ordered systems, chaos has the final word. Tim, this is an interesting one, because over the weekend, I finally got the chance to boot up the latest demo that went live after the previous state of play. And I was excited because one, I was seeing my roommate Makahayam, a fan bite, tweet out about Stranger of Paradise, and that's why I texted him. I was like, "Hey, do you have the game? Like, do I need to go back and reach back for the game?" But he was like, "No, I'm playing the demo, and the demo's save progress transfers to the full game." And I was like, "Oh shit, hell yeah, I'm doing that." And so I booted it up over the weekend, and when I tell you that this game has a terrible first impression, where you hop in, the cutscenes from the get-go don't look great. The visuals look almost smudgy in a way where I'm like, did somebody rub Vaseline on my screen? Legitimately, I was like, am I running the PS5 version? I had to check a few times. I was like, am I running the PS4 version? What is wrong with this thing? The cutscenes felt awkward, right? Like the lines, the delivery, everything about it
seemed
meme-y to the point where I was like, is this on purpose or is this just bad? But once I got through all that, once I got actually into the missions, and I kid you not, like, I can't wait for, if you check out this game, I can't wait to see other people check this thing out. Cause like, once I got into the missions, I got halfway through the first mission before I was like, oh, this might actually be better than it's coming off. And then like, I'm in mission 3 right now. I've done a few boss fights and I'm like, no, this game's actually fun. Like, the gameplay of this game is actually a good time, right? It has like a gear/loot/class system that is engaging, where it is you can't equip two different classes at one time and switch between a swordsman and a I think it's pronounced a pugilist, which is like a fist fighter type character. Yeah, that's a word that I didn't know before, Tim.
Shout out to Square.
You can like, you know, you could be a dual hand like knife fighter, right? Like, has a bunch of different classes and upgrade trees for each of those classes, and the customization that you can get into with the different gear that you're collecting and different like wearable stuff that you're collecting, it's actually pretty engaging. It's a lot of gear. It's almost Borderlands like, but it's really fun, and the actual gameplay and combat itself is fun. It feels like an interesting palette cleanser after coming off of Elden Ring, because obviously there are similarities there between both of these games being, you know, high fantasy action games. Like, Elden Ring is definitely kind of slower in its combat than something like Final Fantasy, which definitely feels like a midway between like a Soulsy type game and a Devil May Cry, right? It feels like it's in the middle, and obviously it's coming from the same devs as Neo, and so that makes sense. But playing it, like, it feels a bit more easier than what I would have expected from the folks behind Neo, right? It feels a bit more approachable in that way. And like, the combat just feels fun. I think that is the most important thing, is that like, I'm going through the levels and I'm like, yeah, man, I'm engaged. I'm enjoying going through the levels. I'm enjoying the boss fights. I'm enjoying equipping different weapons and seeing the different abilities that I can do. It's a fun game. But yeah, no, like, I think what you're going to see from a lot of these reviews is, oh yeah, the story just does not seem there. It is wild how ridiculous the story is.
That's my thing, though, is does it turn the point of that is now a selling point? Because to me, I'm a lot more interested in this game because of the amount of Twitter clips I've seen where I'm like, how is that real? How is that actually in the game? How is that what he says to him at this moment? Like, that stuff, it feels like funny. Like, it feels like whether it's intentional or not, like, they've succeeded at it being enjoyably bad. And yeah, if that's backing up a quality gameplay system, I don't know. That sells me way more than just here's another Final Fantasy story about some like emo dudes.
That's the thing. That is what's carrying me forward and wanting to play the rest of the game. And like, as soon as I finished up the what I was playing in the preview, like, I woke up this morning and I went, oh man, I want to play more Final Fantasy. And so I went into the Slack and I requested Greg. I was like, hey, if there's Stranger of Paradise codes, like, send it my way, because I want to play the rest of this game. And that is because the story, even though I don't care about it from a what's going on in the world place, I do care about it from a, okay, let's see what ridiculous place, like, where this goes in terms of ridiculous places, right? Like, in terms of the weird cues, in terms of, I was dying laughing at the end of the first mission, because there is just an awkward cut after the first boss battle you do, where you're talking to an NPC character, and I forget exactly what the phrase is, but it was, these guys are always talking about killing chaos. It's all they're obsessed with.
All the time.
They just want to kill chaos. They say it every 5 seconds. We got to kill chaos. And he says something along the lines of like, oh, actually, I know what he says, right? Somebody basically tells him that chaos is not what you may think. And the guy's like, and this is your main character, right? He's like, bullshit. And he then plays an iPod and it plays some like fucking butt rock music. Is it Limp Bizkit? It was like Limp Bizkit. Yeah. And he walks away and I'm like, what the fuck is this game? But like, I had a good time, right? Like, I ended that cutscene dying laughing, and I'm riding off the story as something I'm not going to get too invested in the way that I got very invested in Final Fantasy VII Remake story. But you know, if the gameplay is there, I think I'm going to have a good time with it. And so that's kind of where I'm at with Final Fantasy Origin: Stranger of Paradise. Is this a game that now you think you're going to play?
I'm definitely giving it a shot now. Like, they've achieved the level of stupidity that is just so right up Tim Getty's alley. Like, I got to give it a shot.
The more I played it, the more I was like, Tim should give this a shot. As somebody who's
I got to kill chaos, man.
You got to kill chaos. Let's hop into story number three. We're getting another State of Play this week. This time is focused on Hogwarts Legacy. I'm pulling directly from the PlayStation blog. Avalanche Software and Warner Brothers Games are happy to partner with PlayStation to bring you a special edition of State of Play entirely dedicated to Hogwarts Legacy. The broadcast will begin this Thursday, March 17th at 2 p.m. Pacific Time. Since we first revealed Hogwarts Legacy, the trailer has been viewed over 28 million times on the PlayStation YouTube channel. We promise to share more this year, and we're finally ready to deliver on that promise. The show will run for about 20 minutes, featuring over 14 minutes of Hogwarts Legacy gameplay captured on PS5, and concluding with some insight from a few members of the team at Avalanche Software, who are bringing the Wizarding World to life. This is an incredible moment that we've been building toward for a long time. We can't wait to show you what we've been working on. Tim, this is one that came out of left field, right? We're coming off of a State of Play that just happened last week. Hogwarts Legacy is one that we've not heard from in a while. And I think the rumors and talk has been that, oh yeah, this game seems like it's going to come out in 2023. It doesn't seem like it's around the corner. Did this one surprise you when it came up this morning?
Yeah, this is definitely a surprise for a lot of reasons. But I was thinking back, and it being a State of Play, I think, was also surprising for me. Like, I really would not have put my money on Hogwarts Legacy getting its own State of Play.
Yeah,
like,
that's third party game from Avalanche Software, right? I think kind of funny.com slash you're wrong. I think this is the first time we're having a full State of Play that is about a third party game, because like the Ghostwire Tokyo thing was a showcase, not a State of Play.
Technically Deathloop, but
that's a good point. Yeah.
Yeah. Which,
wait, did we get a Deathloop specific State of Play?
I think we did.
Because Deathloop, you're, I think, wrong, just appeared in the, yeah,
it was everywhere. I know that, but
it was everywhere.
I'm pretty sure it got its own. But either way, this is interesting that they're doing that. I guess if I remember correctly, this was a game first officially formally announced at one of the PlayStation events. I don't think it was a State of Play. I think it was
one of the PS5 showcases,
or the meeting, or whatever the fuck they called it. So I guess that it does kind of line up that marketing's going to be there. Obviously, no good time to talk about this game, release this game, whatever, in a JK Rowling being a piece of shit world. And I don't think that is going to change. I don't know that, like, that can change. So
this is coming to, I think, a couple days after she went on another like Twitter tirade, you know, talking about trans people and things that you should not say about trans folks.
Absolutely. And I think that kind of makes this even more complicated, because it's not like there's going to be a better time. Well, oh man, it sucks she did it this week. They could have just, had they done this early. It's like, no, she always is saying dumb shit.
Yeah.
Because she stands by the dumb shit, which like puts this game and everything in a really awkward place. Definitely puts us covering it in a weird place. Like, I feel like with the way Kind of Funny is, like, we really are kind of picking and choose. Like, we get to make the choices and how we feel about everything, because not everything is equal. But like, I don't think we're going to react to this live, unless somebody on the team like is gonna evangelize, be like, oh, I want to. Like, I feel like the Harry Potter people on our team are not gonna want to do that. So
yeah, it's so we'll tough, because you know, in a world where JK Rowling wasn't being a piece of shit out there, I would be excited for this game, right?
Absolutely.
Like, it's Avalanche Software, it's a Harry Potter game, which, like, I remember growing up, you know, going to friends' houses and playing, what was it, it must have been Harry Potter Chamber of Secrets. It was one of the ones that was on the original Xbox, right? I remember going to over their place, playing that game and being like, yo, this is awesome, right? And you know, you grow up watching Sorcerer's Stone and Prisoner of Azkaban and all these movies, right? And like, them meaning something to you, let alone the people that are actually fans of the books and like go through all the lore and read all this shit, right, and watch all these movies. You know, there's a level of like, I guess, nostalgia and appreciation you have for the franchise that like makes me personally, I when this was first announced, I had that gut thing of, oh shit, let's go, oh shit, oh damn, JK Rowling is really like ruining my excitement for this thing. And that's where I'm at now, where I see the State of Play get announced and I'm like, well, fuck, man. Like, you know, it sucks, because I literally just read JK Rowling's tweets right before seeing this thing announced, and it's hard to get excited about this thing that I want to be excited about, because I know if I support it, I'm also supporting her. But also, like, I know the devs that are creating it don't have anything to do with that, and it sucks for them as well. You know, it's such a tough place to be in with all these things.
Absolutely. It totally is. But like, at the end of the day, like, she is absolutely horrible for the things that she is continuing to stand by and say. So it's like, I think that for me, I'm like, hey, I'm not standing for it. But again, if somebody else did, I wouldn't necessarily blame them. This is a very complicated, layered thing. Like, the devs are not related to this at all. It is such a shitty situation for them to be in, that because of her fucking horrible views, it is going to affect their careers, their jobs, their mm-hmm. passion that they're putting into this project that hopefully is something that a lot of people are going to be able to enjoy. But I know that there are demonstrably less people that are going to enjoy this than who would have enjoyed it. So that's just kind of the state of it all. That is the state of play.
It's the state of play. Story number four, Tim. Perfect Dark has lost its game director. This is Andy Robinson at Video Games Chronicle. Perfect Dark's game director appears to have quit Xbox developer The Initiative. According to his LinkedIn profile, as spotted by Xbox sleuth Clobriel, Dan Neuberger left the California-based studio last month. His profile page currently flags that he is looking for work elsewhere in design or director roles. Neuberger had worked at The Initiative for nearly 4 years and was previously a game director on the Tomb Raider series at Crystal Dynamics, the same studio which is now collaborating on Perfect Dark. The Perfect Dark director's exit marks at least the second major design departure on the project in the last 12 months, potentially more than a year ahead of the reboot's expected release. Tim, how do you take this one? Do you find it strange that you're seeing a couple of people that are high level leaving the project at least a year before its release? Or do you think this is just business as usual, people come and go?
It's both. I mean, it is business as usual, especially in this industry. We've seen so many shifts, and I think that we've had equal amount of director, like high profile people, maybe not just directors, but high profile team members leaving the project and it turning into a disaster or turning into a masterpiece or somewhere in between. Like, I don't think that this is necessarily like the doom and gloom, like, oh, fuck, this project's ruined. Mm-hmm. But it also it's not a great sign. You know, like, I feel like no matter what, this isn't ever going to be, unless these are bad people or unless like there's something that we know, like, oh, they are the cause of XYZ issues. Like, it's not necessarily a good thing. So I don't know. I think Perfect Dark has a lot to prove. It's definitely more of an uphill battle type game.
Yeah. Do you think it can live up? Do you think it has the stuff? Because this interesting, as you know, it's the studio's first game as a new AAA advertised quadruple A studio, right? They're collabing with Crystal Dynamics on this thing. They're bringing back a franchise that is beloved, right? But is older, right? I think Perfect Dark excitement is kind of, it's calmed down over the years to where I don't think you have to speak to a fan base that is like ravenous about a thing, right? It's not like Dark Souls where it's been active for like forever and Elden Ring has to live up to the greatest of expectations. But you are making a Perfect Dark game, right? Which I know does mean a lot for a lot of people. You're a big new Xbox franchise, right? Like, what do you think this game has to do to live up to the expectations for it?
The expectations, I think that's the weirdest thing, is like, because of it being an IP that was at one point beloved but then was almost immediately shot on, and now it's been 20 years, like, I don't really think that the expectations are the thing this needs to beat. I think that this needs to redefine what Perfect Dark and Joanna Dark is and are. Like, I think that that's the thing, is like, will this live up to the hype of it being a quadruple A game, of it being a pillar of Xbox's kind of a stable of titles? Like, I think that is the bigger question of, will it meet expectations? Because that's where the expectations are set for this. Like, this is a all hands on deck, especially with them getting Crystal and all them involved. Like, I do think that this is good news overall. I have faith that Perfect Dark can turn into a killer franchise for Microsoft with a new face for Xbox in Joanna Dark.
I hope so, man.
But I also don't think that it's a guarantee that that's going to happen. But I do think that Phil and the team and all of them over at Xbox have proven that they will allow games what they need to kind of exist in the ecosystem that Xbox has been creating. So I'm hopeful that they kind of take their time, make the right choices, and go from there. And hopefully the shaking around here of the director and stuff isn't the bad news that on paper it seems to be.
Doesn't like derail the game. And like, you talk about like, you know, Xbox having the space to like give their developers the space to let their game exist the way it needs to exist, right? And like, you know, I think Xbox they're in a very interesting place where they have now an overabundance of studios between like the Xbox game studios that are already there, now Bethesda, now Activision Blizzard, right? They have a lot of game studios, and I don't think they're in a rush to put anything out because they can kind of take their time with shit, right? They have a big game this fall in the way of Starfield, I'm sure, and they also have Redfall, right? And I'm sure there's gonna be more games to come that they announce for the rest of this year, right? Next year they could have what, maybe Outer Worlds. This is me not knowing anything, right? Could be the next Outer Worlds, could be Hellblade, the next game, right? Like, the list goes on in terms of games that they can use to fill out that schedule and keep Game Pass active and keep the Xbox ecosystem exciting and bright. And so, like, if Perfect Dark doesn't come out for the next 2 years, they're fine, right? And they can take their time with it. I do want it to be like a dope ass game though. Like, right, that is like the big thing about it is, you know, it's again bringing back a franchise that's been gone for a while, right? Big new studio. I'm sure they want success for it. And I think Xbox could use some more faces, right? That you put alongside a Master Chief, right? Or
a car,
right? Or Marcus Fenix, right? From Gears, that's his name. You know, you put alongside those guys, right? Like having a Joanna Dark there, that is, here's a brand new, you know, exciting character that we have on the poster. I think that's exciting. I think the other exciting thing for me is that, like, I want a game that is a AAA cyberpunk, you know, sci-fi, cool-ass first-person shooter, right? Or maybe third-person shooter even. That feels like it is filling that space that cyberpunk kind of failed to live up to in its own hype, right? And something that we're missing with Deus Ex kind of going away also. I want something in that sphere, because that is a dope-ass sphere that I feel like not enough developers are taking advantage of. Like, I like a nice cyberpunk game that feels like either a immersive sim first person shooter or cool ass action RPG, right? Like, I think you can make something really cool with that. So to have that first party and have that maybe be exclusive, I think that could be really exciting.
Yeah, I'm very excited. I was obviously loved the original Perfect Dark, and I think that there was a lot of fun in that world. And there's a lot of dumb charm of like the stupidity of like Elvis the alien and like the fun gadgets, mm-hmm. and all that. And I don't think that translates one for one in 2022, but I do think that could be modernized to be something that's actually really cool and special. But we'll have to wait and see. I'm hopeful. I think that they're investing the right way. So,
last news story for you. Story number 5. Tiny Tina's Wonderlands will have full crossplay. I'm pulling from Randy Pitchford on Twitter, which, you know, it's rare that I get a news story from Randy Pitchford just tweeting it out. But here we go. Randy tweeted this out over the weekend. Tiny Tina's Wonderlands will ship on March 25th with full crossplay for all platforms at launch, including PlayStation. Incredible work from the engineers at Gearbox Software, with thanks to our partners at 2K Games and first parties, including Sony, for working together on this. That is really exciting. We were talking about this, I think it was on Gamescast, when Greg and I were giving our preview impressions of Tiny Tina's Wonderlands, and that was one thing that came up of, hey, are we going to play together? Oh, Andy's probably going to play on PC. I mean, Greg are probably going to play on PlayStation, right? How are we going to make this happen? I love to see that crossplay is happening. You know, I hope that they're able to get it working smoothly, and I think it's going to be huge for the game, because obviously, like, Borderlands in this franchise is something that people love playing co-op. That is a big mm-hmm. part of the game, and being able to party up together is huge, and so... Good stuff, Gearbox. Can't wait for it.
Absolutely. I mean, it is fun that we were just having that conversation, and you know, it's down to the wire, literally like days away from this game coming out, and then this is announced that they're doing this. So that's awesome. And hey, major shout out to Sony for actually making it happen, right? Like, I think that's kind of the biggest part of this story here, is that like we're like working a little bit more towards assumption and standardization that games are going to be crossplay. Like the fact that Greg can't beat the living shit out of Khalif Adams in WWE 2K2022, bullshit.
And also, like, GTA Online crossplay, the fact that that's not working is bullshit as well. Like, I
real talk, I feel like mm-hmm. that is the most egregious thing. When we were joking earlier about how long the next gen versions took, like, I feel like that's the type of thing of like, yo, get this right. Like, that should be the give GTA Online a chance to be the fucking biggest thing in the world again, you know, like level it up a little bit more, man.
1000%. Yeah, it's a bummer to like, you know, try and coordinate like what the stream looks like between me, Greg, Mike, and I seeing people like folks like Andy, right? Be like, yo, yeah, I want the Xbox version. I'm like, oh man, but come over to this side. And of course, like, it's free on PS Plus, so he could play it on PlayStation if he wanted to. But it's that thing of, you don't need to separate people like this. I do think the thing with GTA 5 is that it's probably still rooted in that old architecture, and they're probably just moving things up to include these two consoles. But because the game launched in 2013, they probably just don't have any built-in system to make it easy to implement crossplay. But man, you're Rockstar, you got the money. Like, it'd be dope to see them actually go all in and go, oh no, this actually matters, let's spend the big bucks on this.
Mm-hmm.
But hey, Tim, GTA 5 crossplay is probably just so far away. If I wanted to come out to mom and grab shops today, where would I look?
The official list of upcoming software across each and every platform is listed by the Kind of Funny Games Daily Show hosts each and every weekday.
Out today, we got Capybara Spa for PC, which sounds amazing.
Sick.
Right? Kevin, can you look up Capybara Spa? I got to know how that looks. I got to see some gameplay.
I imagine it's very cute.
Yeah. We also got Hyperbolica for PC. New dates for you. We got Kirby's 30th Anniversary Music Fest. That's been announced. That is happening on August 11th at Tokyo Garden Theater and will be live streamed for the world. Alvo is coming to Oculus Quest 2 on March 17th. And then Pop Slinger, a vibrant musical shooter inspired by 90s anime, comes to Windows PC via Steam on April 14th. As Kevin was looking for that, Tim, have you played any more WWE 2K22?
Yeah.
Are you liking it more so far? Because I've been playing a lot more, and like the more I play it, the more I'm like, shit, I am loving this game.
Yeah, I am still like, I still haven't wrapped my head around it really. Like, there's just something about the way, just the simple way that the combos and all that stuff works that it, I do align a bit more. I forgot who was the review we were reading a bit from, but it was saying that like it kind of just feels like you're inputting things to make animations happen. It doesn't feel consistent what animations are happening. I feel like I just haven't crossed that hump of feeling like I'm in control of it. Like it kind of just feels like not so much button mashing, but it, like Greg was saying, that like when he plays, every single thing feels like he knows exactly what to do in the situation he's in. My brain's just not allowing me to work that way yet, so
yeah,
I'm hoping that it clips, but I am having fun with it, man. That showcase mode is like really damn cool, and I just like keep playing it a little bit more. It's not that long, but I still haven't played through it all yet, so
yeah,
I'm making my way through that.
Yeah, I think I was where you were at in terms of like, oh yeah, I'm just activating animations here. And then after playing a lot more, I've like crossed the hump over to where Greg's at, where I am like, okay, cool. After I do this move, I'm going to pick him up and I'm going to carry him to the turnbuckle, and then I'm going to wail on him, and then I'm going to, you know, Irish whip him across. And like, I'm like planning out moves in that way that feels so cool and feels so like I'm telling a story through a match, which is the corniest thing I could say, but like,
love it.
That's what wrestling is, right? That's what WWE is. And so it's so fun. Right now, Kevin does have Capybara Spa pulled up. And fantastic. When I tell you, Tim, that you are spot on about this shit being cute.
Look at these little guys. They're spawning it up.
Yeah, it looks like a mobile game, honestly, where it is you're putting like capybaras into like the little spa baths and they're like chilling, give them fruit. This looks great.
One's riding another, like, come on.
Yeah. Like in like a horse kind of way. What was that, Kim?
I said, did you guys see there's tortoises running around with them?
No, I missed can you go back?
Yeah.
The tortoises, does it look like Boris the tortoise?
It's smaller.
Where are they at?
That's a turtle. If it's smaller than Boris Torres, right, that's a turtle.
That's a turtle. Where?
Right there.
Oh, the bottom left.
Bottom left. Hold on. There's one in the hot tub with him.
He had like
Oh, shit.
Oh, that's cute.
Tonight I dine on turtle soup.
Oh, no.
Now it's time for kindoffunny.com /you're wrong. Rewrite and let us know what we got wrong as we got it wrong, so we can correct it for those watching later on youtube.com/kindoffunnygames and listening later on podcast services around the globe. Nana writes in and says, the paper item Greg was talking about for the Ghostwire Tokyo preview that absorbs spirits is called Katashiro. Katashiro. KitKat485 says Deathloop did get its own state of play. It was 9 minutes long. 9 minutes and 20... Or 9 minutes... Deathloop state of play was 9 minutes of a 20-minute state of play. This is now Nanobiologist chiming in. And so it wasn't like solely Deathloop, but it was Deathloop focused. And that's it for kindoffunny.com/you're wrong. Tim, me and you nailed it out the park.
We're so cool. Nailed it out the park.
Nailed it out the park. I said it. I was like, that's all right.
Literally, like, that's how you're going to end this, is nailing it out of the park.
We nailed it out the park, Tim. Me and you. This week's hosts for Kind of Funny Games Daily go like this. Tomorrow, you're getting Snowbike Mike and Gary Witta. Wednesday, you're getting me and Andy. Thursday, you're getting Tam and Tim for a Tim Tam Thursday. Then on Friday, you're getting Greg and myself. If you're watching this live on Twitch right now, after this, is a Kind of Funny Morning Show with Mike, Andy, and Nick. If you want to catch that stream later, of course, you can subscribe to youtube.com/kindoffunnyplays. Remember, this has been Kind of Funny Games Daily. Each and every weekday live right here on twitch.tv/kindoffunnygames. We run you through the nerdy news you need to know about. We have a Patreon post show for those that are subbed at the silver level of patreon.com/kindoffunnygames. So stick around for that. Otherwise, until next time, Game Daily.